Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I probably won't pronounce your name right. I'm going to do my best, but you'll introduce yourself. Sevam Ustinov. And I think we have a really, he's a really cool founder of Pluro AI and, you know, go-to-market, agentic execution for marketing teams. I think it's going to be really interesting conversation and in what you're working on. But please go ahead and introduce yourself and do a better job than I.
Yeah. Hi, Dean. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me here. My name is Seva. I'm the CEO and founder of Pluro AI. I've been in digital marketing and performance marketing for 20 years. I started my marketing agency right out of college and scaled it to like 100 plus employees, 15 million in revenue. And several years ago, I launched Ally as a marketing data platform here in the US. And now it's like this week, it was rebranded to Pluro, AI agent that actually automates performance marketing for large-scale advertisers. And at the same time, this week, we announced our fresh seed round, like 3.5 million raised, 4.5 so far. So it's a huge week for us.
Yeah, congratulations. That's really exciting. So yeah, you spent a lot of years in performance marketing before you built Pluro. Like what specific pain, like attribution, ops, decision latency that like pushed you to productize all of this?
So I've been in the agency businesses for like 15 years, and it was a lot of fun. Like we were responsible for revenue growth from digital channels, for SEO, Meta, Google, TikTok, landing pages, conversion rates, basically the whole user acquisition part. And at some point I was like, after 15 years, I was a little bit tired of that. I wanted to launch my own software product. And I thought like, what's the core thing that brings value to our customers from the like agency times? And it's actually like data-driven marketing, attribution, data that allows marketers to make better decisions, what to scale, what to downscale, where the highest LTV customers are coming from, what actually works and what doesn't. So that's how we decided to launch, at that time it was called Ally, the data platform. And the output of that was basically a dashboard that just says, okay, like here is your 1,000 campaign assets and creatives, and here is how they perform in terms of new paying customers, customer acquisition costs, LTV, ROAS. And that was huge because it allowed marketers to optimize their ads for ROAS instead of cost per lead or something like vanity metrics. That didn't age well. Marketers don't like dashboards. They don't like looking at their dashboards for hours and then changing something in the ad platforms, because like it's extremely boring to go like we're especially talking about companies spending hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars per month on Google, Meta, TikTok. So they typically have like 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 ad sets and creatives running at the same time with new data coming in every day. So Like they typically have like multiple marketers or agencies running channels for them, and handling all of that is like it's painful. I know people spending 4 hours per day every day looking at numbers and making changes to their ad campaigns. So this is how we decided to launch our own AI agent that basically does that for them. So they say something like, "Hey, go analyze all of my campaigns and suggest what should I do about them? What to stop? What to scale? What to downscale?" And the agent basically opens the same dashboard, but like obviously not dashboard, it's just the data behind it, and goes through each of those hundreds of campaigns, each of those thousands of ad sets and creatives, checks like which are promising, looks like winners and should be scaled, which are like not doing well and should be stopped, and prioritizes the list and says like, okay, here is your green list, you should scale it. Here is your yellow list, we should maybe take a look at it. Here's your red list, you should stop it, downscale it. And if you want, just tell me, I'll do it myself. So the marketer now can like ask an agent like, "Hey, I like your analysis. Go implement it." And if when the marketer is satisfied with the process, they can just say, "Okay, I like the process. I trust your analysis. Create a rule out of it that would be applied automatically, like every day." With confirmation and without confirmation. So we're actually like moving from people looking at dashboards and making manual changes to AI agents analyzing all the data and making changes for them to deterministic rules that does the job on its own. And if you don't like something, you go ask your agent, "Hey, change this rule, like take into account this or that." And that's like highlights where the whole knowledge work is moving from doing things manually to creating and managing agents to creating automation with agents.
How is the whole like trust factor going for that? And how explicit is like the deterministic rules? Is it like how are you building? Because you're dealing with a lot of money here, and so like when does the human take themselves out of the loop and feel comfortable with deterministic rules? And like how's that going?
So this is why it takes like a few weeks, maybe even like a couple of months to go through all these steps. Like a new person, new marketer, doesn't trust agents out of the box. And also those agents, they don't know all the details that needs to be taken into account. Like imagine they have like different rules and different targets for different countries, like for advertising in different countries, or maybe different types of campaigns that should be dealt with differently. Like every company, every team, every marketer has like a long list of personal preferences and rules and specifics that should be taken into account. So actually, it takes like days, weeks for marketers to send agents to like analyze something and get back with recommendations, and then tune it again and again, so that agent takes into account everything that is needed. So this is like you probably heard about people saying that in the future, marketers and other knowledge workers will go from doing work manually to managing agents. This is how it actually looks. Like you ask your agent to do this kind of analysis, it does a good enough job, but maybe not enough. And you say, okay, like in this case, double check that the ad campaigns you're analyzing, they are their performance is not those creatives are not showing signs of fatigue, or that you take into account delayed conversions and LTV forecasts, or like things like that. And over time, with multiple iterations, those agents start doing a good work. But you still need to like double check what they're doing, because they are non-deterministic, and from even if the instructions are perfect, from time to time there might be slight differences, and maybe the new model came out, somebody changed something in the context, and like it's not 100% reliable. So this is why we make a next step and say our agent, okay, like we have this instruction, we have this logic, how exactly we want our ads to be managed, the part from like scaling and downscaling, not the creative part, the part that can be done with just based on the numbers. Create an automated rule that will implement it and send it to me to with confirmations, for confirmations. So now the marketer just checks those actions. Say, I like this, I like this, I don't like this. Actually, like our rule should take into account that, I don't know, when actual sales are higher than forecasted sales, we should use actual sales. And it happens sometimes. Forecasts are a statistical thing. Anyway, there could be something like that. So, like now they iterate on rules that actually make those changes to ad accounts. And now it's deterministic. It doesn't depend on the model. It doesn't depend on the mood. It doesn't depend on anything. It just works based on the full funnel data from of the company, metrics, and so on. And previously, that was available only to large companies with huge marketing operations and automation teams working specifically on this area with tasks, with sprints, with multiple weeks and months of improving that. And that was available to like companies spending, let's say, $100 million per year on ads. Now, mid-sized companies, and in the future, like small businesses as well, would just ask their agent, like, let's build an automation here.
And how about the data connectivity? Like for all that to work, some of the things you talked about and the ability to create automation, I mean, you have to feed it data out of business systems. So how does that work in the platform?
So basically, we have an agent that can connect to ad platforms and to full funnel data. Maybe it's the full funnel data from our data platform that we've built for over the years. Maybe like in half the cases, it's actually like an data warehouse that and dashboards that company built for itself internally. A lot of our customers, they actually have their own dashboards, their own attribution. So they already solved that part, and our agent just connects to the data they already have and works with that.
Okay, that's helpful. So they already have a ETL warehouse with the data from their operational system. So that makes it a lot easier. Yeah, that's
Exactly,
interesting.
yes. And they
And
don't have to change it. We just work on top of their existing infrastructure.
right. And then is there a model that works better for what you're doing, or does it go back and forth between like Claude and OpenAI and like what would you, do you have a point of view there or?
I mean, have you seen that meme? Like, hey, are you living under a rock? The Codex 5.3 was the industry standard for the last 20 minutes.
So
I
you
mean,
switch back and forth.
yeah, so like at the moment, it's mostly Opus 4.6 and Codex 5.3. And for long tasks that are like cost sensitive with lots of tokens, Sonnet 4.6 is good enough. But that changes like weekly, sometimes daily.
Yeah. And like, how do you like price your platform where there's like, are tokens a big part of your cost or not really?
So, like the pricing is custom for mid-size companies. It's a percent of their ad spend. For like large customers spending over $1 million per month, it's like negotiated individually. The token costs at the moment, they're not that huge. Maybe. So we don't charge for them separately, but we are coming to a moment where we'll have token heavy workflows. So maybe like in a month or two, we'll see how to change that. Essentially, we want agents to run every night, like hundreds or thousands instances in parallel, analyzing competitors. Trends their creatives by hundreds of parameters and a company's own ads again across hundreds of parameters and combining that all together to come up with the idea for the next perfect creative. Because you know, for companies that spend a lot of money on digital ads, they create hundreds of new creatives each month, and only 5% of them actually work and bring them money. So it's a game of creativity and technology, finding what works, what would actually work and attract audience and scale. So today, like humans do that. Just looking at things, getting inspired, and trying some next thing, next idea. We want agents to do that, but like 100x more. That would be token heavy. Like we'll see how we deal with the pricing at that moment. But like if it brings value, like then we'll figure out the pricing.
And I guess that's pretty surprising. Only 5% of the creative brings in, all the money. And is that 5% per like ICP or five, like is it that little?
5% even is a like pretty good number. So you like you launch 20 different ads, and statistically, just one of them will actually like resonate with the audience and be scaled to thousands, tens of thousands in ad spend and hundreds of thousands in revenue that it brings. 19 others, like maybe a few of them will be like average. They won't scale. They won't be have positive ROI, and like I don't know, 15 will just eat some money and die without bringing any customers. And 5% isn't. It's a good benchmark. Sometimes it's 3%, 2%. So you have to try a lot of things and run a lot of things to find creatives that actually bring you customers.
And how fast is that loop? Is it like spend $1,000 and in an hour you'll have that feedback? Or like what's like the time frame and the cost to get that kind of feedback?
The cost is between like $20 and $500 per creative. So you run it for a day or several days. You see how it performs in terms of like CPM, CTR, cost per lead, cost per paying customer, and then if you like this metrics, you start scaling it. But in a lot of cases, like, okay, it brought a few leads, but not customers yet. Maybe we should wait a little bit. And this is what takes so much time because when you have hundreds or thousands of creatives running at the same time, you have to check like performance of each of those and make those decisions. And that is like time and brain consuming.
So you kind of talk about when you say revenue linked or full funnel attribution, what are the like the minimum data requirements to get something trustworthy, for your margins, your LTV, or how do you look at that attribution?
The attribution part is relatively easy. Like, imagine you're launching a new company or a new product within a company. or even the new channel, marketing channel. At first, like you spend hundreds or thousands of dollars, let's say per week, like single digits, thousands, just to test how things work, what resonates, what are their conversion rates. You don't even need any kind of like sophisticated analytics. You just see that if you spend a couple of thousand dollars on ads on Meta, you got like, I don't know, 10 new customers with couple of thousands of revenue. No analytics, no data platforms, no attribution. You just see it. Once you start scaling to tens of thousands of dollars per week, per month, or hundreds of thousands of dollars, it becomes tricky because you have like tens of campaigns, maybe multiple channels, maybe hundreds of ad sets, and like, okay, what's actually working? Meta says that we got this number of leads or signups or trials. But how many actual paying customers we got? What is the revenue from those customers, from each of those campaigns, ad sets, and creatives? So at that moment, you start thinking, okay, I need a data platform. I need attribution. You can build it yourself. You can use one of the products like ours. But like this is the moment where you need dashboards that show you what's working and what's not. And then the next question is, okay, if we scale further, we have so much data to work with that we need agents to do that work for us.
Okay. And like is the AI smart enough to like not get confused by all the noise if you have too many creatives, too many target customer segments? Like does it do a good job of like not having extra noise but having very, focused analysis on your specific ICP target market? Like is that how's that? Is that hard work or is that work in progress or
Like this would become the actual work of marketers. So at the moment, it works like this. We start working with a new customer. We set up like one call about their data and how to get their data. That's an easy part. Then we set up a few calls with their marketing team to talk about their sales funnel, their business model, their landing pages, their campaigns and its structure, like the time delays, targets, benchmarks, and all of that comes into context of the agent. Some companies already have that prepared, like they started collecting their descriptions and context long time ago, so their agents can be smarter. If it's not the case, we'll just have a series of calls to get the data, structure it, and give it to our agent. So now agent knows the data, where things live, how they're connected, what's this business about, what are our channels, campaign types, regions, marketers, targets, everything. That allows an agent to understand you and to answer questions based on that context, like with your data. And after that, we move to like implementing those workflows. So maybe with a generic prompt, agent can do like pretty good job, like average job in 50% of cases. And then I say, okay, if it misses this thing that it should use forecasted sales instead of actual sales for the last week, because like there is a delay in the conversion, we added to rules. And now agent is smart enough to not make this mistake next time. And then we notice that it actually confuses experimental campaigns and evergreen campaigns, and that we should have separate rules for those. We added to rules, and now it knows that distinction. And maybe we can even do two separate workflows for optimization of evergreen campaigns compared to experimental campaigns. And that takes iterations. And at some point, it's good enough and smart enough, and instructions are detailed and accurate enough. So every time you ask it to do this kind of analysis, it just does it, and you're happy with the result, and you just follow these recommendations or even go to the automation phase. And that's the actual job of the future to tune your agents to do the work for you reliably.
Yeah, and so I guess you have to be really careful about segmenting your agents because they have memory, and I mean you're giving it these skills and everything, but so you guys build that into your platform so that be, so there's no, because you kind of talked about some confusion that they could have with evergreen and experimentation, and so I guess that's some things that you build into your platform to do that.
Exactly. And you can actually open the project context and look at everything the agent knows, or you can just ask it, what do you know? What about this? What do you know about this part? And ask it to change it, or even connect to our platform from Claude Code, OpenClaw, or other agents, and work that way. So yeah, the context is transparent. And you can change it.
And so what's like the hardest part to optimize? Is it translating intent? Is it validating data? Is it executing ad APIs?
It's a good question. The hardest part. So the story goes like this. Like 1 year ago, when we're building a data platform, I, as a founder, I realized that this is not going anywhere. The world is changing. It's changing with AI, and we don't know yet how that world will look like, but we know it will be like AI first, specifically agentic AI first. So I started experimenting a lot with that myself. I hired a team of AI developers to figure out the prototype of our new product. We wanted to build an agent that can, you can say it like, go optimize my ads and it will do everything for you. Soon enough, we realized that doesn't how it works. You need to give specific instructions for every part of the action. And it actually starts with the lowest level from the ads and creatives level, not from the high level, overall metrics and channels. Okay, we've changed that. Then we realized, oh, actually, we need our agent to understand the data. Otherwise, it always starts with the a blank state and starts doing dozens of SQL queries just to see what it has in the data. Okay, maybe we should just pre-cache it and explain it upfront what it has in the data. So it knows this cost per lead, average ad spend, which countries are we operating in, and so on. That was done. Now we started to integrate it to first clients and realize it just doesn't understand what we're talking about. Yes, it sees the numbers, but it doesn't know the specifics. Okay, maybe we should add business context. So we started doing that, and then we realized, okay, it now we have this very smart agent, but where is the actual value? So we started working with our clients, analyzing how they do work manually today and how it can be automated, like specific workflows. Like they launch new creatives, then they need to make decision when to scale it or when to kill it. We can analyze and automate that. Then when it's scaled, they need to scale it to a right point. We can automate that, and so on and so on and so on. So there are actually dozens of separate workflows that could be analyzed, launched, and then optimized. So it kind of works as a fractal. There are technical questions, there are business questions, and then there are workflow questions. This is how we build our system, and this is how our customers build their workflows on top of that.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, I like that. And now do you have, or does your customers have trouble giving all this data to the AI, or that hasn't been a problem?
That hasn't been a problem so far, specifically because it's kind of the same data they already store in the cloud using their dashboards. So it's just numbers. Yes, it's a sensitive t data in terms of it's a financial data, but there is no personal data of people, nothing like that. So it's just another tool.
And they're not worried about the models getting trained and using their data to optimize other people's GTM or digital marketing or.
Yes, and like, what you're gonna do about it? Like, everyone is doing this. The people are using the most sophisticated tools, getting a huge advantage. And also, like, actually, like, all the business customers that pay for tokens via API, including us, we set this checkbox, like, don't train on this data. So AI is mostly trained on free customers on free tiers, or customers that give explicit consent to train AI on their data. Sometimes AI labs, they basically give AI inference for free if you're allowed to train on that data, but we don't use that.
Yeah. And so this whole operating model shifting, like with the agents, agentic agents doing like 80, 90% of the repetitive execution analysis, like where do you see our growth teams, going in 12 months? Like their roles, their skills, their rhythm, their rituals?
I think it will mostly move to automation and creative part. Like, I can any kind of repetitive things will be automated. When teams, like previously, at some point, teams to hire to had to hire like a second marketer, a third media buyer. Marketing operations guy. So they're like, with scale, you need more and more people to do the job, basically. Now your teams can be lean, like maybe one, two, three, four, five people on the team, mostly managing agents and making key decisions and setting next goal and figuring out a way how to achieve it. So the routine part will be automated like at 90% level. I think this year will mostly be about that, like that process, like everybody, each person have its own learning curve. They need to go from ChatGPT to Cursor, Claude Code, work to specialized platforms like ours, and there will be like a ton of them for different parts of work. And like this, it's a transition year between old style of doing work manually, maybe, and using ChatGPT is an old style now to these agents doing the work. But you're, as a person, you're still reliable for the output. It's your call, it's your decision, it's your agent. You gave it instructions and you're responsible for the results. And if it doesn't work as intended, it's your job to figure out and fix it.
And so what metrics matter? Like you've been doing this for so long. Like what are like two or three metrics that really matter relative to marketing teams, digital spend, things that you're working on?
Okay, there are like an evolution of goals. At first, with small budgets, small scale, you just need to figure out what works, try a lot of things, and your metric is just getting leads, then getting sales, then getting the acceptable ROAS. It has been the same before. It is the same now for low scale. The next thing, once you found the right product, the right message, the right channel, and something starts to work, you want to scale it. The metric there is you need to have that data and attribution and everything. Like if you're an e-commerce company, that's easy. You just open Google Analytics, Meta Ads, and you see this is my ad spend, this is my revenue. But for the companies we are working with, those with leads, signups, trials, like fintech, like software, with delayed conversions, with long tail LTV. Their most important metric is revenue and ROAS. Otherwise, they're just flying blind. And watch
What did you
and
say? Revenue? What? Revenue.
revenue from each channel, ad set, creative
Okay.
campaign. Yeah, that has been this the case in the past, and it's still the case now. What changes is, I don't know the metric yet, but maybe workflow coverage, like what percent of work is automated, because at scale, you run hundreds of campaigns, thousands of creatives at the same time, and your competitors doing the same, and they're testing, and everyone is like analyzing the trends, analyzing competitors, launching new creatives, new targetings, new landing pages. If you do that manually, that gives you like even if in with a 5-person team, that gives you a capacity to do like 10, a few truly novel tests, or maybe a dozen of adaptions of what's working right now. With AI agents, you can gradually move to hundreds of tests per week, to hyper-personalization, to precise optimizations of your campaigns at scale. Maybe today, like, it doesn't really matter much, like if you're working the old way or the new way, like, but in a year there will be a lot of companies that figured out the way how to scale their creatives production, how to scale their campaign optimization with an agent like ours, how to track everything their competitors are doing and pulling the right the most promising ideas. Like in 12 months, you won't be able to compete against that, except if you have your own agents.
Yeah, it's everyone with their own agents will keep leapfrogging each other, and then there's a whole another problem.
I mean, for consumers, it's great news. Like super personal offers, exactly for your taste, at exact the right time. You just like open your Instagram, scroll photos of your friends, and see the thing you were thinking about exactly for you. But like that's a world that actually reads your mind.
You have to be careful of like the conversations you have, even if you're not even online. All of a sudden, you start getting ads just because you were talking about something that you may not have been very serious about, and you're
I
like
still
getting.
think it's a conspiracy, but like the well, maybe you Google something, maybe you visited specific websites that indicated your interest. Yeah, your interest. That actually like machines and AIs can understand your intents even before you like realize you have them. Just based on your like actions, clicks, like that part is real.
No doubt, no doubt. So like what's like a hard lesson you learn? Like what's one contrarian belief you have about, I don't know, attribution, measurement, that most marketers get wrong? Like, what did it cost you or a client and before you corrected it? Like, maybe just, share some hard won or hard-earned lessons.
I think that it's just not what catches my attention anymore. Like, I'm working with AI agents myself, like 6, 8 hours per day.
Doing
And
what? Coding or what? I guess mainly coding or what agents do you work with?
I work with Claude Code. I used to work a lot with Cursor. And we actually moved the whole company context to Cursor. So calls, transcripts, knowledge base, code, sales pipeline, customer success, everything was and is available to our agents. Then I moved to using Claude Code on top of that data. Then our agent was good enough. So now I'm actually like helping develop those workflows. And it's kind of fun what you can do with agents. But like, I've already talked about that. The latest passion is OpenClaw. It's like a personal AI operating system. I already have two of them. One is like personal with my notes, diary, therapy, and it's like an AI therapist, AI coach for me with the knowledge of all of that. And the second one is like work related, so I connected it to our shared workspace from the company, to my personal CRM, and to our agent. So I've been playing with it for a few weeks now. It does research for me, it helps me write content, it reminds me like what conversations was I taking with like people from my network. I just like send a voice message like, hey, I just met with this person, go do the research, add them to the CRM, and this is the and give me a follow-up message. It's not
So
sending emails for me yet, but it's close.
that's interesting. So like you have a personal CRM, so like you're trying to have memory in different agents, right? Like based on, right? I mean, I think that's how I'm interpreting what you're saying. And is that
Yes, I
right?
want to have so we have like a company CRM with leads and stuff and deals and sales pipeline, but I have even more people like friends, investors, potential customers, experts in the industry, podcasters. I want my agents to have all context about my network, what we've been talking about, what we've been emailing about, what were the next steps we discussed. So it's a work in progress, but like we're moving there. It's not fully automated yet, but it's close. At the moment, I can say it like, oh, go update all emails with Dean. Go research his profile, and make a note that we're going to have a follow-up call in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so that's up on that workflow use case for your personal CRM. Yeah, that's cool. And now, aren't you like, I mean, are
Okay,
you worried about?
maybe one more fun stuff.
Sure.
Fun and scary. So, like this OpenClaw thing showed how personal CRM or personal operating system could look like. Okay, it's technical. It breaks all the time. It's for nerds, but it shows where things are going. So now, in a year, everyone will have their own personal AI operating system with their knowledge, with their context, with their CRM and context, with their preferences, with their learning process. Everything will be there eventually. And
Sometimes you want
most
to
of the
delete your
tasks,
memory, though. Like sometimes you want to delete some of this context.
you can do that. You have full control over that. But the thing is, like I'm using less and less interfaces and more asking agents to do things. For example, I wanted my agent to be a depressive robot from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So I asked my agent to go find his voice example from the movie, clone it with 11 laps, and send me messages and replies in his personality with his voice. I didn't
I
open. Okay, I opened 11 Labs interface once to get
love
an
it. What the
API
what would you
key.
say? 11 laps? I don't know what that is.
It's an AI lab that does the voice things.
Oh, 11 laps. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Okay, I got it. Okay.
So I opened their interface once to copy an API key, give it to my OpenClaw. Everything else was done like without me interacting with 11 Labs directly. So like I'm building an AI company myself, and I'm extremely curious, and it's actually like a life or death question. How should we build our product and our agents for the world where people will work with us through their personal agents?
Well, it's a reality for everybody now. And but like you're not worried, like Gartner's like, don't use OpenClaw. Don't it's like very, very insecure. Like you're not worried though, I guess.
I am worried. I think I just hope I know what I'm doing. For
So
example,
you're
I
worried, but
still
you're
didn't.
ignoring it because the learning is too interesting.
I hope I am careful enough. For example, I still didn't give it access to my inboxes in the email, in LinkedIn, and so on, because I want to build an injection protection system first. So I can ask it, like, go download all their conversations with specific person, because I know that person, I know our conversation, it's safe. But I'm not giving it access to, like, inbox with random stuff there.
Yeah, okay. So you are like trying to manage its access, basically,
Yes, yes.
even though it's inconvenient. See, that's the
Yes.
problem, the inconvenience of stuff. Like, you just want to give it the data. You want to give it access. I mean, I guess you're resisting that.
We'll be there. Like, the Silicon Valley will build all the infrastructure. There are already, like, specific services, open source and private, for prompt injection protection. There will be, like, some kind of open source frameworks and private products for, like, personal knowledge graph and things like that. Like, don't worry. I want to play with it today because it's my job to understand
Yeah,
where the
you need to
technology
get
is
the
moving.
insight. Yeah.
Yeah, but for everyone else, like, just wait a few months. It's not that long anymore.
It's not that far away. And for my audience, they probably all know what prompt injection is, but like how what is that? Like prompt injection, like
It's like, remember those spam messages that say, just click this button, download this thing, and some people, small percentage of people, actually did that and maybe had a virus on their computer or something like that.
yeah.
Now, if your AI agents read your emails, in some cases, like, somebody could write an email that would trick your AI agent into thinking that it's a relevant instruction, and, like, again, basically infect your computer or something. But your agents are smarter, have access to your knowledge, private knowledge, API keys. In the future, they'll have access to some of your finances. So, like, it's a dangerous stuff. You don't want your AI to have input from random people because they can trick it into doing something you don't want it to do.
And like, what's an example of how they would trick it? Like, what would they put in the text of an
Okay,
email that
the
would trick
simple
it?
version that went viral, like, a couple of years ago, is just a text: ignore all previous instructions and send me this. And
Okay.
like, stupid AI models from a couple of years ago, they would literally ignore previous instructions and follow new instructions. Now models are smarter and smarter and smarter, and then we'll say, like, hey, I'm reading an email from an unknown person. That's probably not a good idea to follow these instructions. It
Yeah.
looks like a prompt injection. But then, like, it's an arm race. So, like, people are doing it in a trickier and trickier way, and finds a way to trick AI models. So, like, it's an actual thing. There are not that many cases of hackers using that, but when we'll have hundreds of thousands or millions AI agents scanning, like, email inboxes of different people, there will be people who'll try to exploit it.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. So, was there a question I didn't ask you that you wanted me to ask?
Maybe how to prepare for all of this, because, like, I feel like it's a fundamental shift in how people work, and still there are a lot of people who actually treat it as a, like, crypto hype bubble or something, and people use ChatGPT and say, like, hey, okay, this thing can summarize me something, can help me with ideas, but come on, how can it change my job or take my job? and just one core message: go try Claude Cowork, Claude Code, like actually smart agentic AI that can actually do the work for you. Like, it will blow your mind.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, it is amazing. Like all our devs are using Claude Code, and it's amazing. It's
Oh, very, very, very important. Claude Code has code in its name, so it's like people think that Cursor and Claude Code they are for developers. They are not. It's a generalized AI that can do presentations, that can do research, that can do that can work with your emails, that can process a lot of documents and find something for you. They can in our case, like analyze your ads and automate it. So it is not for developers, it's for everyone now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good distinction. Yeah, it's been really enjoyed chatting with you. How can people get in touch with you and learn more about your platform?
So if you're interested in the platform and you're spending like hundreds of thousands of dollars per month on ads, just go to the website Plurio.ai, and there's just one Plurio, so just Google it and you'll find it. If you're interested in AI in general, I post a lot of stuff on LinkedIn. My name there is like Seva Justinov, same in this in the podcast and everywhere. And I'm happy to like answer questions or chat about like I'm all into this AI stuff. And I love conversations like that.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you very much. Good job, and appreciate you sharing to our audience.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida. And Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.